Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. We're very excited, Sharon and I, that you are here. This is Living Eden, and I'm your host, and Sharon is the beautiful goddess that we are going to interview today. Sharon, would you like to say hi?
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you.
We're both excited about today. And this is Living Eden, the program devoted to inspire and empower us into our divine brilliance, always bringing new paradigm concepts, new projects, virtual journeys, meditations, and loving awareness. So welcome here. And today we are going to be talking about Sharon Rose's co-producing the movie The Last Avatar, and that will be very exciting. And in a few minutes, I will share an intro to her, which is quite amazing. And right now, let's take a big deep breath, a couple of them, starting in your belly and breathing the galactic breath of through your heart, through the Earth's heart, and through the heart of the cosmos, inside of the divine source heart. And then as we breathe out, releasing whatever holds us back from being who we truly are. So let's take a big deep breath now. Through your heart, through the heart of Earth, through the heart of the center of the galaxy, inside Divine Source Heart, and releasing all that blocks you from receiving. And in that releasing, finding the space to be present in your body. Feeling your energy move down through your body, through your torso, through your hips, down into your legs and your feet, into your Earth Star just below your feet, and down a beautiful golden cord to the center of the Earth. Feeling yourself grounded. And another breath in, another galactic breath, breathing in Divine Source, And when you release, feel yourself falling into the arms of Divine Source. So take a deep breath into your pineal gland and release out into the arms of the Beloved. Being received, feeling received, and valued and honored. As you move even deeper into your body, deeper and deeper, and being received by the Source, all it is, in great joy. And grounding deep into the earth. Okay, I think we're ready to hear who Sharon Rose is and how much she has been traveling this planet on all levels. She's a dancer, artist, philosopher, and spiritual adept. Sharon Rose is of the lineage of those bold and luminous women who take the journey to the goddess wherever and to whomever it may lead. She's a true Renaissance woman, a filmmaker, choreographer, composer, author, teacher, and healer. She has spent the past 35 years working in the fields of education and the arts to investigate, integrate, and impart the knowledge and wisdom of ancient and traditional cultures throughout the world. Throughout the years, she has learned to transit the worlds of art, spirit, and commerce in a unique and compelling way. In the realm of filmmaking, Sharon is producer of The Last Avatar feature film. Writer, I think I'm going to stop there for a second. And this Last Avatar movie that her and her husband created has been called having an outstanding cast, evocative music, and inspirational special effects. Jay Wiedner, who is her husband, delivers an adventure story packed with revelation of who we truly are and the alchemical key to our greatest awakening. And that comes from the William Henry, who's the host of Revelations Radio. And another quote from Jennifer Hoskins from the New Dawn magazine. It's a visionary metaphysical feature film with a strong message and plenty of action, woven with the best from Eastern and Western religious and prophetic cosmologies. All this in a compelling story that will hold your interest to the very end. This is a film that is itself a wake-up call. It encourages us to divest ourselves of negative programming and move into higher planes with the help of our light bodies. It addresses the chaos that is happening in the world today and suggests a solution. I recommend this film to all that are looking for a possible solution to and a definite escape from chaos, both in our own lives and in the world. And that is from Jennifer Hoskins at the New Dawn magazine. So I'm going to continue with her introduction. So she's the producer of The Last Avatar feature film, writer, director, host of the documentary films 2012, The Odyssey, and Time Wave 2013. Executive producer of the documentary Infinity, The Ultimate Trip. Creator of the DVD, Yoga of Light. And producer of the films in the Sacred Mysteries DVD collection. Since 2000, she has been president of the DVD distribution company, Sacred Mysteries Distribution, and vice president of Sacred Mysteries Productions. From 1983 to 1988, with the assistance of a professional development grant from the American Institute of Indian Studies and a Fulbright Senior Research Fellowship, she began extensive research into the art, culture, and spiritual traditions of North India. During this time, she became the first American disciple of the early Bollywood film star Tantrika Bollywood, film star Tantrika, and renowned classical Indian dancer Sitara Devi, and was initiated into a secret sacred tradition of the ancient feminine yogic arts. Since that time, she has consistently sought out other remnants of these rich symbolic teachings in the ancient traditions of Egypt, Tibetan Tantra, Kabbalah, and Gnosticism. She has also trained in the healing arts of craniosacral therapy and the psychophysical method of neurosensory re-education. Sharon is the author of the award-winning book, The Path of the Priestess, a guidebook for awakening the divine feminine. She is also the director-composer of the World Music and Dance Performance Project, Shakti's Bliss, a celebration of the many aspects of the divine feminine. From her many years as both scholar and practitioner in these ancient ritual arts, she brings a unique perspective on the power and potential of integrating mind, body, and spirit. In addition, she is the owner of Shasta Style. She has created beautiful shamanic feather earrings as the one seen in the movie The Last Avatar. And looking for more information, you can go to the website www.thelastavatarmovie.com and www.sacredmysteries.com and www.shastastyle.com. And I have another quote from Dr. Jean Houston. Sharon Rose is dancer, artist, philosopher, and spiritual adept. She is of the lineage of those bold and luminous women who take the journey to the goddess wherever and to whomever it may lead. Her research is impeccable. Her ability to translate the ancient themes into expressive forms is unmatched. And her many years of extensive work in ancient traditions of dance, ritual, drama, and song is unique in our time. And that's Dr. Jean Houston, Senior Consultant to the United Nations on Human Development and the author of The Passion of Isis and Osiris. So, we welcome this amazing goddess. Sharon, welcome to Living Eden.
Thank you. Thank you. It's pretty wild to just listen to that. It's like, wow, I've done all that?
That's what I said, but I didn't say I've done all that. I said you've done all that. That's awesome. And before we start, well, I wanted to also invite everyone on who's listening to the show to go to Crestone Pictures online, and you will find gobs of pictures of this wonderful place where Sharon and her husband Jay live. So that will be your assignment. Part of your assignment for the week is feeling and seeing, touching the pictures, letting the energy come into your heart and your body and your mind, letting yourself really receive Crestone. So, Sharon, would you like to share with us what Crestone is like for you?
Before we came here, now we only live here part-time. This is a spiritual retreat center. It's up about 9,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains. It's called the Shambhala of the Rockies. There are 22 different, probably more now, spiritual centers. It was created as a refuge. And the people who actually, it was Hannah Strong, who really gave away the land for all of these centers. And she felt that she wanted a place, knowing what was going on in the world, the chaos, a place to preserve all of these magnificent traditions, spiritual traditions from across the planet. And so this was created. So it's about 9,000 feet, and then you're looking up directly at 14,000 foot peaks. It is the quietest place I've ever been. And prior to coming here, I was getting a bit depressed about the nature of reality, seeing just the suffering and the confusion in the world now. And once I came here, where it's extremely quiet, there is a sense of the elements of nature, of beauty, of quietude and stillness and spaciousness that I have never found anywhere else. It's a real strong community. People care for each other. I mean, it has its problems. We all do. But it is magnificent. And in fact, I was just ran into the mayor, this lovely woman, who was talking about wanting to find ways to let more people know about this amazing place. Because once you're here, I wish everyone could come. I think it would change the world if people had the experience of this sense of just expansiveness. And it's she said today, it's a real energy vortex. The veils between the dimensions here are very thin. And it's just extremely conducive place to any kind of spiritual practice from all traditions.
And that is the energy bowl that we have this show in this amazing energy vortex that Sharon was just sharing with us in great energetic, being able to receive it from the energy in your voice. Really beautiful.
The other aspect of it is that it's people of all different ages, just like with our movie. It appeals to the millennials. There are a lot, and there's a lot also, it's a big center for alternative building. So there's all kinds of really unusual buildings here. When I first came and started looking at places, I felt like I was in Tibet. There are actually 5 Tibetan centers here.
Wow.
And people living in straw bale houses and all kinds of alternative energy, straw bale, and people living in, like, underground and lots of greenhouses. And it's a real community.
Oh, that's incredible. Right on our planet. What a journey to go there and experience all that. Wow. And can you share with us how you got started in this life's direction?
Well, the artistic aspect came from my mother, who had been, she went to college at 14. So I grew up in a Jewish family. very devoted to arts and scholarship and business. My dad was a, and still is at 93, still running his business.
Wow.
A supermarket, supermarkets in the black community in Baltimore. I think that because of his business, it gave me a real beginning, and also in the arts, the understanding of what someone might call multiculturalism, or just the beauty of humanity in all our different aspects. So my mom was very focused on dance. She had me dancing as soon as I could walk, which was 9 months old, and then sent me to ballet at three and singing at five and on and on. And I was a very sensitive child, and the dance and the music really was my first connection with embodying other beings beside myself. So as a kid, I was in ballet, I was fairies and angels and queens, princesses, and I really loved that. And then I went to college in the 60s, so everything, 66, everything was shifting. The whole psychedelic movement was upon us, and the feminist movement, and I was immersed in all of that, and went to New York, and was immersed in the modern dance and the performance art scene there. And then I discovered yoga and meditation, so that's early 70s. And then in, 78, I had this visionary experience where I just transformed into an Indian temple priestess, and in front of me was Shiva. And even though I'd never done any Indian dance or studied Indian dance or even seen much, I started doing it naturally, all the mudras, and I felt I was doing it for Shiva. And it seemed as that every movement I was making was actually creating reality around me. It was extraordinary, and it was right after that that I found my teacher, my first North Indian classical dance teacher, Dulal Talukdar, in Boston. And then by really synchronicity and magical circumstances, I ended up in India with my teacher, Sitara Devi. And that really altered my life, being with her, living with, she was really the living embodiment of the goddess Durga. And she was the one that really introduced me to a completely different perspective on the feminine and on reality in general than I had been given by my Western culture.
And well, it sounds like the veils in your life, any veils that would have been hard to pass through or kept you blind from things, were either non-existent or very thin, so that you were invited from all different areas and directions, starting with your mom and dad, into all these experiences in your life.
Yeah, it's been extraordinary, actually.
Yeah.
I would say that that experience with her was fundamental to my opening up to completely different perspectives than what I had been given, you know, being raised, particularly on being a woman. She actually said when I got there, she said, "Well, you look like a man and you dance like a man, so I'm going to, first dance will be Shiva." And then while I was there, she like broke me down, you know, on so many levels, broke down the conditioning and gave me this ancient form of, it's a tantric art form where you transform. You become the vessel through which all of these ancient teachings, all the stories, all the myths from the Hindu tradition.
Yeah. This is one of the aspects of your movie, right? Awakening the Divine Feminine. And tell us how you've woven that into the movie.
Well, I'd have to start from the beginning of what the movie's about. So all of our work, and we've had this company, Sacred Mysteries, since 2000, my husband and I. And it began actually with the Divine Feminine and the Light Body. It began with a instructional DVD that I created called Yoga of Light, which was in alignment with my book, The Path of the Priestess, which is exercises for aligning women with their divine feminine nature, transmuting negative emotions into what we call enlightened emotivity, and how to perceive the light body, cleanse the chakras, cleanse the mind, cleanse the emotional body. So it became divine feminine and light body perspective. We went on with doing films with Alex Gray, the great visionary painter, Alberto Bioldo, the healer, shaman. And so the divine feminine and the light body have been themes that we have looked at over many, many years and brought forth. And in the movie, well, the movie, somebody recently said, well, you're so much into the divine feminine, how come the movie was about a guy as the main character? Well, from my perspective, in my own work, I feel that women have been in the Western world, and this is what motivated me to write my book, have been systematically indoctrinated to emulate men. Now, this is shifting. It's shifting. I can see it in the younger women. And I felt that having looked into all of these traditions, these ancient traditions, that women had a very different role. Women were the healers. They were the teachers. They were the mediators. They wove the fabric of the psychic energetic landscape. They were able to travel into other dimensions to find healing tools. They so many things, and carried, you know, of course, carried the rites of birth and death. And so somebody said to me, why is it a man who's the lead in the movie? And I said, well, wait a minute, have you looked at the women in the movie? They're all guiding him. They're all playing the role of leader. Now, there is Neil Donald Walsh, of course, is in the film playing Count Saint Germain, and he has the role of kind of like a Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, so the teacher that introduces Jack O'Ryan, the name of the lead, into his larger self. He introduces him to the concept of the light body.
Mm-hmm.
But the women in the movie, and in the film, he's also initiated by a priestess of Lemuria, the guardian of Lemuria. So he's, once they recognize him as the avatar, and actually his role as the avatar is merely a metaphor for the fact that we all have this ability to wake up and be the enlightened being that we are. So he's taken underneath Mount Shasta and given this knowledge by this beautiful priestess.
Wow. That is even from that one piece, that one level, there's many levels within that one also. And it's so heart-opening. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And well, all the work I've done, since we are very knowledgeable about symbolism, we do our best to create films and works of art that speak on many, many levels. So,
go ahead.
My teacher, Namkhai Norbu of the Tibetan tradition, he always talks about each according to their capacity. And so there's teachings according to, you know, if you're a beginner, ones that will appeal to you and on, you know, as far as you can go. And that's what we like to do. We like to do with our films and our works of art. If you are a beginner, you see beauty, you see love, and it gets deeper and deeper. If you really look at our films, you'll see, like, symbols embedded in. In fact, Jay has done some films on the work of Stanley Kubrick, the great filmmaker, where he talks about the movie 2001 as a work of alchemy and describes the alchemical symbolism.
So this is the level within the movie that is geometry and the sacred. And a lot of people, I don't think, have been introduced to geometry as sacred. Could you say a little piece about that?
Yes. Fortunately, I've had amazing mentors in my life, and one of them is named Robert Lawler. Robert Lawler actually coined the phrase sacred geometry and wrote the book Sacred Geometry. Actually, I was really, you know, mathematics for me as a kid was, I just was not taken with it very much. It just, it seemed like memorizing things. You just had to remember and remember, but it didn't seem to hit me on a visceral Gnostic level. But when I met Jay, he gave me a book called A Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe that talks about the numbers 1 through 10 and how they're metaphysical nature and how that you can experience them in nature, in architecture, etc. And it opened my eyes and my senses to a world that was so extraordinary, the world of sacred geometry. So as Robert would say, the beauty of the human form, as well as the molecular architecture of every cell, are derived from the same permanent relationships found in the structural components of geometry. Geometrically perfect squares, cubes, circles, and spheres, triangles, and tetragrams, and especially golden measures of pentagonal shapes and volumes, the leaves of trees branching in growth patterns throughout the plant world again follow the same invisible geometric field activity. However, it's not only the physical realm which embeds these metaphysical formative forces. One finds also the origins of the key characteristics of intelligent life, such as rational reasoning, meaning, rapport, irrational, logical, and mediation. All have originally been derived from geometric and numeric formula and relationships.
And so there's a lot of this in the background of the movie, and one of the sacred geometries that is so beautiful in the movie is the torus.
Yes. Well, the torus plays a very strong role in our teachings, in the teachings I do, and we'll get an experience of that towards the end when I give the meditation. The toroidal form is exists around the human being, around the earth, around the galaxy. It's like a donut shape. And in the meditation, we link down to the center of the earth and then again to the center of the galaxy.
Yes, and I've seen information around the sacred geometry being all everywhere, so that it can create energy. I mean, it is an energy creator.
Oh, of course. And it's interesting because Robert Lawler, he talks about the sacred geometry from the Gnostic perspective. And they say that the entirety of creation is forged in the fiery cosmic web of geometric celestial alignments, resonating orbital fields, and planetary cyclic and formative ratios.
So people can, even when they watch the movie, they can gather, they can watch it over and over and gather more and more all the time. and they can let those things that they get in touch with lead them into studying more and going deeper, and they could use the movie for education.
Oh, definitely. And that's actually, it has so many levels. Recently, I've been very pleased that a number of people who have been deep in the study of the light body from the Tibetan and Hindu traditions have been saying, this movie has a transmission. It really, on an energetic level, because film itself is an amazing medium for transmission of knowledge, because you're getting the sound, which is very powerful in itself, and the, you know, the light, the rays of light coming at you, and you know, you'll get, you, it's, you're immersing yourself in it's magical. In fact, I always like to say about the word Hollywood, well, that comes from the tree. The tree that made the staff of the Druid priest, that was made out of holly wood. And so it's an ancient form of magic being brought into the world through film. Now, you know, magic can go either way. It's an energy. And too often, our films have been always counter to the most of what the mainstream media is offering. And we can go into that later.
Okay. Well, let's go back right now to the Gnostic theory of alien intrusion, which is when you're on the website with the Last Avatar movie and the synopsis, that is the very first level that you have for exploring the Gnostic theory of alien intrusion.
So this is exactly where I wanted to lead to. So Gnosticism.
This is or isn't?
Yeah, Gnosticism is a teaching that came, actually, it said that it's actually pre-Christian. It existed within the Hebrew tradition and other, and the Egyptian tradition. And it's interesting because I just put up this post on our Facebook site that has been getting so many, it's amazing, so many clicks. And this is a great way to describe gnosis, because it exists in all traditions, actually. The experience of a directly felt perception of and communion with the essential light and power of divinity lies at the heart of numerous spiritual teachings and practices the world over. The clear, immediate experience of this awakening is known as gnosis or wisdom. It arises as a bright, lucid knowing, an intuitive realization of the divine presence as it exists within all of creation. It is the most sacred gift of the divine, a gift which has the pure, penetrating power to fully open our hearts, eyes, and minds to the beauty and majesty of not only the concrete physical world we inhabit, but to the hidden mysteries of the subtle spiritual realms as well. That's actually from my book, The Path of the Priestess. The Gnostic tradition existed right about in the first few centuries of after Christ and beyond. The Gnostics felt that they carried the true teachings of love and compassion and community that Christ was bringing forth, and they were systematically destroyed by the Catholic Church when it cemented itself into what became, you know, the forerunner of the Inquisition and all of that. But they felt, because they saw, especially there was a group called the Cathars in the south of France in like 1200, around them. And that's where the courts of love and the troubadours and all of that, the knights and the reverence for the feminine was strong. And the Catholic Church trying to cement its hold on the people was going on. And the Gnostics, the Cathars and other Gnostics felt that they looked at the horror that was going on, the evil going on, and they felt that that perhaps there had been a alien force, an alien parasite, because it seemed so different from what was truly heartfelt humanity. And they felt that this force, this alien force, they called the Archons, and that these aliens had come to the planet and had kind of embedded, the way I describe it is, embedded themselves in our genetics and in our light bodies and our psyches. And they feed off of negative emotions. So the anger, the fear, the hatred, the war, all of those things are being stimulated by these archonic negative forces. And they particularly, they're anti-nature completely. And so they're like very pro-invasive technology. It's a great metaphor for many of the things that we are so disturbed about going on the planet today, which engender incredible suffering. So we introduced that concept of the Archons. Many people would say the groups on the planet that actually do not have our best interests at heart are being manipulated by the Archons, the greed, the torture, just the horror is being, it's like the Archons have embedded themselves into the psyches of these beings. And so we bring that concept in, but at the same time, people, you know, ask, well, what do you do about this? Well, the only choice is love and forgiveness. So how do you defeat these forces? First of all, you have to recognize their impact upon you and discern between the false and the true. Discern what is part of your actual genuine enlightened nature, which we all have, and what is being conditioned, what has been. So I like to talk about how when we did our movie 2012 The Odyssey, where I went and interviewed all of these, this was in 2006, interviewed many of the major teachers about what was going to happen in 2012. You know, they talked about this, the world turns upside down, the lie becomes the truth in this time of transition, and where it's like a great purification where those that have the eyes to see and ears to hear, you know, start to begin to hear and see this great call to the light. And as you align yourself with your own divine nature, you begin to see the false from the true. And so we want to bring this concept of the Archons forth so that people would get a greater understanding of this alien force, which is a very separate thing from our true humanity and alignment with divinity.
Yeah, that's really true. It's like when you see certain or feel certain people who are so cruel, it doesn't look like a regular human being. Are they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they don't act like they have any concept of love or peace. And they don't seem to care about only themselves and how they can get more money.
Right, right. Well, that's that whole, I call it the mass media merchandising machine.
Mm.
You know, that really came in with, I would say, television. Right.
Mm.
It was not only, it was a new way. I like to talk about how this force, you know, we could give it the metaphor of the Archons, came in and they had colonized, like a colonizing, that's a parasitic. The Archons are always connected with parasites. So they feed off of our negativity. And this parasitic force came in strong. It's the force that wants to colonize and control. It's the force that wants to, once the whole world had sort of been colonized, it's like now they decide, okay, we're going to colonize everybody's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And through the media, which, you know, these are tools. The media is a great tool for transformation, but they can be used just like magic for the good or for the negative. And too often, they are also with all of these tools, they have the potential also to completely divorce us from the natural world, like, you know, the whole transhumanism movement, to me, is very archonic, in that we're going to be, you know, leaving our connection with the earth and just go into these imaginal realms. And to me, that's the opposite of true gnosis, which is like really being in touch on a visceral level with the planet.
And that being the divine also.
Yes. Yes. The body of Sophia.
Right. I was just going to say the Gnostics were the ones that centered in the female deity, the divine Sophia.
Yes.
Wow. And that is just a small piece of the movie, because the movie leads us into prophecy and spirit and dream time too.
Oh yes. Well, in the movie, the movie is also about the Lemurians, and in the mythos, the Lemurians, who were an ancient magical mystical culture, saw that, and they had come out of the Pacific, and even in the lore, it says that they lived on the west coast of the United States, particularly around the Mount Shasta area, and are still there underneath Mount Shasta. And so Jay, in the writing of the movie, brought in this idea of the Lemurians, and that they saw these dark times were coming. And so they went and lived under Mount Shasta, but they would contact human beings through their dreams.
Mm.
And so in the movie, there are some psychics in Mount Shasta, and they've been contacted from children in what they call the dream school. So when you go to sleep, you go to this dream school and learn metaphysical teachings. And they're waiting for the fulfillment of the prophecy, which comes out of the Hindu tradition, that Kalki avatar, who is the final avatar of this current age. He's an avatar of Vishnu. Vishnu in the Hindu tradition is the preserver. He's there to really care for the earth with his consort Lakshmi, as in the Hindu tradition. They all have consorts, which is wonderful, so it's a balanced male and female tradition. And So whenever there's trouble on the planet, Vishnu takes an avatar. That's where avatar comes from, not just from James Cameron. And so he's had nine in this cycle of time. One of them, let's see, the last ones were Krishna, and then Buddha was an avatar. And the final one of this age is named Kalki. And Kalki comes to awaken us and destroy the enemies of truth and lead us into our own awakening. In the mantra of Kalki, which is Om Shrim Krim Maya Vinashanan Shakti Namo Bhagavataye Satkriya Kalki Avatar Namaha. It means that he comes to destroy illusion with his sword of wisdom, and the moment he destroys illusion, he brings the bliss, Anan Shakti, the bliss of the feminine principle. So in the movie,
in all of that, there is the sacred marriage of the divine masculine and feminine, which is a key, a very powerful key to bringing in the new Eden.
For sure. I really feel it's not just that in this time, of confusion and where things are extremely polarized, look at our political world. You know, it's completely polarized. People can't even talk to each other anymore. It's just, they're so rigid in their, you know, their ideas, and they're just holding on so strong without seeing that we're all in this together. And we really need to have conversation. So it's clear to me that we need to start walking what the Buddha would call the middle path. And that's where, you know, all sides are integrated, and that there is a discussion in ourselves between the right and left brains, we could say, and between, because we're all essentially male and female. And so it's really time, especially as we're moving into the age of Aquarius, it's really clear that we're in this time of balance, of energetic, moving into this balancing of male and female energies. But in my work, and you'll see later, I always begin with the feminine because I feel that we've been in this, you know, patriarchal time where the masculine has been so powerful, and that I want to first align us to the earth. And then once we are completely aligned and connected to the earth, then we bring in this like the masculine seed that comes in and surrounds and imbues and protects us.
Yes, and the divine feminine is needs to be empowered and known. And one of the things that happens with the marriage is that the divine masculine reaches into the dark, the depth of the womb of the divine feminine, and is the one that pulls out the seed that makes all things new. So we have to be in relationship first with the divine feminine, and that's, I see it as raging through the planet now, which is wonderful.
Yeah. My prayer is that it's not just this kind of like, oh, women in politics. I mean, that's very, because it was a traditional role for women to be the mediators in the councils in these societies, because women have so much wisdom. However, I want to see it, and you see it in some, you know, some of our politicians, but I want to see a true feminine perspective, not just a woman who is really just touting the same old patriarchal values, but
right,
in a woman's
right
body.
Yes. Well, I think there's many women on the planet now who are bringing that out and giving it and teaching it and empowering women to know who they really are. And that definitely shows up in your movie, too.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it's an important point these days. you know, we're looking, the movie was created, of course, to help wake people up to their true nature, their true divinity, their true avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a low budget, you know, it has corny moments, but there's really, you know, something magical there. And it's particularly resonating, we're finding, with the millennials, which is very exciting because we really created it to be a film that would appeal, you know, cross-generational.
Yes, I think you have done that.
Thank you.
Can you share more about the prophecy that is part of this movie?
Yeah. Well, so again, we wove together a number of different traditions. So the prophecy is that Kalki will return. And actually, Mount Shasta, and he'll return in Mount Shasta, Northern California. And so in the movie, as a bad guy, because you have to have them, is head of a secret society who also is aware of this prophecy, and he's trying to find and kill Kalki, because he says, you know, if Kalki comes, our 6,000-year dominion over the planet will come to an end, no more war, no more, controlled populations, you know, all of these things that are going on. And so he and his minions are trying to find Kalki. And then the three psychics, who are also aware of this prophecy in the movie, the prophecy is that he is going to appear in Mount Shasta, which in the used to be called Mount Shastra. And Shastra is a word out of the Hindu Sanskrit tradition. And it's one of there's the Shastras and the Tantras and the Vedas. So it's one of the kind of books of teaching, Mount Shastra, you know, the teaching mountain. And so that's where the prophecy in the movie, it's kind of a mix of the Lemurians, the Lemurian prophecy that they're going to be contacting human beings in the dream time, and when the time is right, release these teachings onto the planet. And then the prophecy of the Hindu tradition of Kalki appearing.
Because that was the first time I ever heard of that prophecy when I listened to the movie, which really surprised me, which is pretty exciting, actually. And that Kalki represents all of us.
Well, that's the important point.
Mm-hmm.
We, as Jay was doing an interview about Kalki, and it's been really interesting because as Alexander Polinsky, the wonderful, talented actor who plays Jack O'Ryan, who becomes Kalki, when he was doing research into the part, he found that there were all these people out in the world saying that they were Kalki. And so Jay said, and then when we had a screening in Boulder, our first, you know, premiere of the movie, this young man came up to us and said, but that movie's about me. That's my life.
Oh, isn't that exciting?
So Jay said, well, what if this time when he comes, you know, it's not just, you know, one person, the Buddha, but there's like a million Kalkis, and we're all waking up. Whether you're male or female, you can be Kalki.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's just that force of awakening and alignment that
and
is
I really,
really
invite
important.
To come to watch this movie and see the end of it too. Watch it all the way through.
Yeah, the end is very. I don't want to give it away, but it's very.
Me neither. Yes, and other things that are in the movie too are the yoga of light, and you have brought in, that's another level all through the movie, is these this light and the flows of light, and Alex Gray's, who has been the painter of the lights flowing in the air and in our bodies. And I love that that's in the movie. And
well, we did. Alex is a friend for many years. We have the same Buddhist teacher, Namgyal Norgal. That's how we met in like 85. And his work is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And so we were inspired, you know, we couldn't afford him. But we were, you know, our animators were inspired by his work, and I am so grateful to Alex and Allison, his beautiful wife.
And wonderful. And, you know, and after watching the movie and seeing the movement of the light and it flowing through live people, and I was in my pool yesterday, and I decided to just stop and stand in the pool and invite the light to flow that way, and oh my gosh, to be conscious that that's happening in your body and to connect and immerse yourself in it is a very powerful experience. So I invite people who watch this movie to take that literally and use it.
Oh yeah,
we've
gotten a lot of people writing in about how it is a transmission of the exactly what you're talking about. Once you see it, well, it's like Alex's paintings. You know, you get this real sense, because it's the movie, it's moving images. So you see the light flowing and the torus being created, and then the torus around the earth. So people have been really remarking on how it enhances their visionary capacity.
Yeah. And can you imagine hundreds of thousands of millions of people doing that all at once on the planet? Just that one
that
thing.
That would be extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, in this age of scientific materialism, it's like we've been kind of cut off from that knowledge, and it's just. But we're fortunate also that we live in this magical moment, where these teachings, through the vehicle of these tools, the internet and all this, and the ability to travel. You know, between the internet, traveling that way, or traveling even you know, from country to country, you know, go to teachings, coming to Crestone for teachings, where you can really experience these things, because the EMFs are very, very low here. All of the electricity, all those lines and stuff, and the telephone lines, they're all underground. So you have a very different experience of, you know, all of these fields that we're in the cities, between the fields and the, you know, all of the noise pollution, the air pollution, in the water we're drinking, all the, you know, pharmaceuticals been dumped in it. It's like created to, so that we're completely lost in this realm of delusion. And when you come into a place that is quiet and beautiful, and the world of nature, you start to really. It's hard for some people in the beginning because we can become addicted to these things. You know, our nervous systems become addicted to stimulation, and for a little while, you need at least 3 days. You begin to shed all that and really come back to your true self.
Yes. And I want to honor, too, that there's a lot of that being offered on our planet now, and that Crestone is one of them. And even my show, The New Eden, The Living Eden, is a little tiny dot in it, but it's there. And there's so many people and so many communities, and it's actually enormous. But the people who are into not into it don't know how huge it is, nor how wonderful. So I'm really happy about the movie.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. And is there? And what are you doing now?
When
you're done with all that you've had to put into this movie, and you need to move on, where are you going? Or have you already started?
Oh yes, I have. But first, I really would like to talk about, we were discussing this yesterday, I'm kind of the reluctant businesswoman. And I was in the arts all my life, and then when Jay and I decided to make Sacred Mysteries, I went into the business aspect, and it's been quite an education. And I'm looking at ways, right now what I'm doing is working on distribution. So marketing, promotion, and all of that, and finding ways to work within the, of what I'm looking for in terms of community on the planet. So I'm really enjoying this Facebook experience because I'm able to connect with, I had no idea there were so many people into the Divine Feminine. There's tons
mm-hmm.
of groups. It's,
and mm-hmm.
and I'm doing this, you know, without Hollywood backing. And we've had a number of Hollywood companies want our movie, but the deals were ridiculous. So we just brought it out this way to begin with on Vimeo On Demand, where people can rent the movie for 48 hours and see it. And I tell everyone to have parties with your friends to watch it, because it's a great mechanism for discussion. But anyway, after this, I started a few years ago, I started composing all of this music for Shakti's Bliss. Shakti's Bliss was envisioned as a kind of like river dance, but for the Divine Feminine. So there are these songs and rituals for different goddesses. I've been reconstructing the music, dance, and ritual from the hieroglyphs of the temples of Egypt. All of it, we're singing and we're actually dancing in our bodies, the hieroglyphs. And so rituals for like purification and healing. And so I want to get back to work on that. Adie, the star of the movie, who I must mention, the female star of the movie, who also did the soundtrack, she's part of this, as well as these wonderful Indian and Middle Eastern musicians. Some of the songs have Sanskrit, some have Hebrew, some have Tibetan, and so all that's intermixed with English. And that will have a book also to go with it. And
wow, how exciting.
There's a lot going on, and I'm continuing to work with Shasta Style. We want to make, besides the earrings, we want to make all kinds of different feather adornments. And also I'm very, very deep into, once again, delving into the world of healing. I'm particularly looking at what we call holding patterns, how patterns in our physical and then from the physical into the etheric bodies have been set up from childhood, and how to identify those patterns and how to release them. So I love the world of healing. I just love it. And so, you know, in freeing myself of these patterns, we might call them archonic, I've been exploring that world again and want to continue with that, because I feel that that is the real true path of the priestess, that of healing.
Healing? Oh, okay. And you are a beautiful priestess.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. So you're not only doing dance, I think your dance sounds a lot like there's a new, well, at least I think it's new. For me, it was new. What is it called? chakra dancing.
Oh, I've been hearing about this. Yes. Well, mine is different. Mine is really the result of starting very young in the Western tradition of ballet, which actually was built on, I don't know if you know this, ballet came from sacred geometry.
Well, that's another thing I've seen on TV, on the dance shows. Sometimes they actually display the geometry of dance, the different dances that people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
They actually draw it.
Yeah. So I've been really fortunate to work in ancient traditions that have been around for centuries and have living teachers in these. And so it's what I'm bringing forth in Shakti's Bliss and my teachings. Really, I'm always looking for what I call the primordial tradition. And so I've been really deep in the study, you know, dancing 8 hours a day, studying every aspect that I can of the tradition, whether it's Egypt or India or Tibet or even Gnosticism. I have a beautiful ritual for Sophia. And the chakra aspect of it exists within all of these traditions. And so I haven't encountered chakra dancing myself yet, but it's a part bringing in that knowledge and how dance it becomes this, you as the dancer become this vehicle through which spirit really moves.
And that's what chakra dance is like.
Yeah, the deeper you're trained, like the Indian tradition was incredible. I mean, I came to it because I was, as a modern dancer, really, even though I've been very highly schooled in these Western traditions, their techniques, I love to improvise. And so I went to Indian dance, North Indian dance, because it was a tradition in which there's incredible, like most of Indian arts, incredible wealth of, for example, there's a book, the Natyashastra. It's their kind of fifth Veda on the arts. And there are 40-something expressions of the eyes, each connected with an emotional state that the, you know, the dancer or the actor learns. And actually, I bring those forth in my book, The Path of the Priestess. So it's this incredible system of music and dance and vibration that gives one, and it takes a while to really learn it, but it gives you these tools to really improvise and bring forth, let the spirit flow through you as the vehicle that's been trained to bring forth these teachings onto the planet.
Oh, that's so exciting. I'm so glad you're doing that. I hope someday I can be part of that.
Oh, I'd love that. Well, we would love to have a sacred arts festival here in Crestone. Maybe next summer. We're talking about it.
Oh, I think that would be magnificent. So,
yes.
Well,
yeah.
You have something to offer our listeners to a special meditation for everyone?
Yes.
Does that feel right to go into that from this space?
Oh, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that.
Awesome. Well, you take the floor.
Okay, I'm going to see if I can turn on my tantra here. It will go on. And then
while she's doing that, I want to remind people to go to her website, SharonRose.com, and then the other website, TheLastAvatarMovie.com, and her Shasta, is it Shasta Style?
Yes.
.com for the jewelry.
Yes, lots of sites.
Mm.
So, let's take a journey. So, we'll begin by sitting. Seat yourself in a comfortable position with your spine straight. Take a deep breath in. Close the outer doors of your perception. Release all your worldly concerns and turn your mind inward. As you look within, notice how the movement of your mind and the flow of your breath through your body, notice how they're really interconnected, how the ebb and flow of your breath seems to reflect the state of your mind and your emotions. Notice that no matter how restless and disturbed your state of mind is, by slowly taking a deep breath and then fully releasing it, you'll begin to relax. Now travel with me to the land of the eternal feminine, the primordial ground of awareness, and the holy sanctuary that lies at the Bindu, or mystic center of creation, a truly sacred space in which all forms appear and disappear. It is the still, silent place of emptiness and serenity, the primal source of life and light. Now picture that deep down in the hidden center of the earth is a pool of liquid light. It's calm, dark, and placid as a mountain lake surrounded by the blackness of night. Visualize that from the very heart of this blackness, a glowing sun begins to emerge, luminous and bright. The secret inner sun of the goddess, the initiating and nourishing force of life itself. Now imagine that just like a tree or plant, you have roots at the base of your spine that extend down into this glowing womb of the earth. Through these roots, you're able to sense and make a connection with this ancient inner sun, the light of Shakti. Feel the fiery light rise from the heart of the earth through your roots and into the chakra at the base of your spine. See its cleansing rays stream from the subtle energy center as shimmering particles of light. Feel these rays, these luminous rays, radiating out through your thighs, knees, calves, ankles, feet, and toes, clearing away any tension or pain that resides there. Imagine that running down the center of your body is a very subtle tube-like channel. Channel as strong and supportive as the trunk of a great tree. This is your central channel. In the Kabbalistic tradition, it's known as the central pillar of the tree of life. In the Egyptian tradition, it's known as the Jet pillar. Now focus your attention on the area 4 fingers below your navel, your second chakra. This, according to the mystics, is where this central channel begins. Now imagine that through this second chakra, you are drawing the magnificent, flaming, revitalizing energy of the sun from the center of the earth in the form of cleansing terrestrial fire. Think of your second chakra as a doorway to the subtle central channel. With each inhalation and exhalation, feel this energy rising up into your second chakra as the light fills all of the petals of this lotus. Feel the glittering rays of the warm solar radiance pervade and radiate out from this chakra. Feel this light, this healing light of the goddess, dissolve any tension, strain, or congestion in your pelvis. Experience this tension fading away as simply and naturally as the morning dew dissipates when touched by the brilliant rays of the rising sun. Now feel this cleansing spiritual fire rise in the form of a bright and shining sun up through the central channel into your solar plexus. Allow the clear, lustrous energy of this glistening orb to emanate outward from the subtle center, spreading its cleansing rays of light through your small intestines, stomach, liver, gallbladder, colon, spleen, and kidneys. Feel the energy's deep, liberating power clear away and dissolve any anger, tension, anxiety, and fear we hold in our solar plexus. This is so where so many of us hold our tension, the solar plexus. And so we really want to feel this light releasing this tension. Now, bring this light, this exquisite, beautiful light, up into your heart. Feel the pure, distilled essence of this light streaming through your heart, burning away layer upon layer of the tough protective armor you've created to shield this most sensitive and powerful center. Let the light absorb, purify, and dissolve all the pain and sadness you hold in your heart. Release any sorrow, anguish, grief, or apprehension that you may be experiencing. Feel the fire. Kindle the fundamental light of love and wisdom that lies within the depths of your heart. Let this light shine forth from your heart chakra like a flaming torch, illuminating the darkness of night, awakening to the immense power of your own spirit. Now bring this light, this flame of wisdom, into your throat. Feel the vital energy of the sacred inner fire blaze into your throat chakra. Allow this light to radiate forth, fully opening this subtle center and encouraging you to release the choked up feelings and abandoned insights that have been imprisoned. Imagine that all of your speech, all of the concepts and words that flow from your mind into the world are being energized and purified through their contact with this blazing light. Allow your upper body to surrender to this divine purification process. Now, allow this sun, this sacred inner sun, to rise into your head until it reaches the psychic center behind your eyes, the pineal center, the third eye, Dakini eye, eye of gnosis or wisdom, the sacred metaphysical eye that sees in dreams and visions. Feel the bright energy blaze through this chakra, burning away your negative thoughts and habits. Let go of all the idle chatter that runs through your mind. Feel your Dakini eye open to reveal the proud dawning of your innate wisdom in the form of glittering golden sunburst. See its shining rays shoot forth, clearing away all the tangled webs of chaos and confusion that surround you, filling your mind with total clarity and luminosity. Now, bring this light further. Imagine, like a fountain, the light rises up and spills, drips all around your body, opening your cosmic consciousness, the center of cosmic consciousness. The light rises up, 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 up through your all your channels, purified, creating like a fountain around you, a toroidal shape, like a fountain. So here you are with this light showering up and through you, the light from the center of the earth, creating like a donut shape around you, a donut of light of all your channels and chakras. And once that you really feel that flowing, then link up. Imagine the center of the galaxy way above your head. And from the center of the galaxy, the womb of the great goddess that seeds the seeds of the masculine energy are pouring forth like starlight. And flowing through the cosmos, coming down into the lotus flower at the top of your head and pervading each chakra in turn. Coming down through your third eye. Through your throat. Through your heart. Through your solar plexus. Through your navel. Through your second chakra. Through your base. The stars flowing down, and then around, creating a second torus. A torus of protection. So you have the one coming from the center of the earth up through the central channel and spilling forth, and the one coming from the center of the galaxy, the masculine essence. So we have the Kundalini coming up from the earth, the Kundalini Shakti, and then we have the essence of Shiva coming down through the center of the first torus, creating another torus of protection. And then around that, we see shining rainbow flames of wisdom sealing this ball, this toroidal form of energy, protecting us. Linking us, the masculine and feminine within us, creating a vibrant, powerful shield of light, protection, and balance. And from this place of clarity, we go to the center of your heart, which is the center point between the earth and the sky. Imagine waves of rainbow light are traveling forth throughout the planet, throughout the cosmos, healing our earth, healing ourselves, and creating a living Eden. I know.
Goodbye, everyone, and thank you for being with us. And we send you all the blessings of this moment and this beautiful goddess who's been with us.
Remember, we are all gods and goddesses.
Yes. And don't forget to watch the movie. And I'll be back with you next week. So enjoy your life and be filled with the essences of love and joy and peace and abundance. Thank you. Thank you all for being with us. You're important and you're needed, and we're thrilled to be with you. Bye now. Bye, Sharon.
Bye-bye, Sharon.